it is gone. A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins into the second deck for Bryce Harper. Swing and a miss. He got him. And Aaron Nola leads two. Segura on the run. Reaches up and makes the grab.
Swing and a miss. Struck him out.
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 321. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up, we're going to talk about some Philadelphia Phillies baseball. Yes, everybody, they are still playing. The Phillies are still playing Major League Baseball games and will continue to do so throughout the next week, if you can believe it. And joining me, as he does every Sunday night, to chat about your local baseball team is Justin Clue, the head guy from The Good Fight. You can follow him on Twitter at Justin_Clue. Hey, Justin, the Eagles played three games this weekend, one on Friday, one on Saturday, one on Sunday. Can you believe that?
Excited is how I would describe how I feel. Excited to be here. Just, you know, we're still talking baseball.
Yes.
It's fantastic part of the sports calendar right now.
Yes. Normally, this time of the sports calendar is pretty awesome. But you know, we've got a baseball team that is not going to go to the playoffs that we
absolutely
all thought was
watching. Watching fans, you know, get excited about their teams.
Oh, yeah.
And then looking at our team.
Oh, yeah.
And just, you know, just nothing. There's just nothing there. Just watching, you know, Mike Morin enter a game. Jared Hughes doing that running thing. I mean,
I can't get enough of that.
September baseball, baby.
Yes. No, I'm really hoping we get more Jared Hughes next year. I want to see him make that run in about 50 or 60 times next year. That'll be just great.
If there's anything I like about an ineffective relief pitcher, it's when he has a gimmick.
Oh, that's sure.
Extra likable.
Who is it? Turk Wendell, that always used to chew licorice, I think, have a big wad of licorice in the side of his mouth because he didn't want to.
He did it all.
Yeah, and then he used to brush his teeth in between every inning because
jump over the foul line.
Yeah. I love guys like that. He was super effective too. We're going to talk about the Phillies series in Cleveland. They lost 2 out of 3 a little bit. We'll get into some other stuff as well. Liz Rocher will not be joining us tonight. She's a little under the weather. Hope Liz is feeling better soon. And I'm sure we'll talk to her next week. But in the meantime, it'll be Justin and I taking you through this episode of Hittin' Season. And let's start off with talking about this series in Cleveland, a series that they really had to sweep, Justin, in order to stay alive here in the wild card race. And
did they do it?
I'm looking at my notes here. No, they did not do it. Came close, though.
Close. Very close.
Yeah, on Sunday Night Baseball, I mean, it was really... Listen, any team can lose by 9 runs. I mean, it just happens. And the Phillies lost the Sunday night game 10-1. Vince Velasquez and Mike Morin did a real good job allowing the Indians to pull away. In fact, the Phillies lost 2 out of 3 this weekend in Cleveland. And as the standings sit right now, the Phillies are now a full game and a half behind the New York Mets for third place in the National League East. They are all alone in fourth place, down by a game and a half at 79-75. And, you know, I got to tell you, man.
All alone in fourth place.
All alone in fourth place.
Boy, what a demoralizing statement.
And I got to tell you, man, a winning record is not a guarantee here. They got to get 3 more wins in order to finish 82-80 on the season. 1 more win to match last year's total, and now they get 5 games in 4 days in the nation's capital against a Washington Nationals team that, honest to goodness, needs every single win. They are now tied with the Brewers for the top wild card spot. Nationals and Brewers have the same record. Actually, the Nationals are like 1/100th of a percentage point ahead because they've played 2 fewer games than the Brewers, and they're going to make that up against the Phillies this week. But, I mean, so they have a lot to play for this week. The Nationals are going to be out there trying to win every single game, and the Phillies pretty much know that they're playing out the string here this week. So you got 5 games in 4 days against the Nationals, and then 3 at home against the Marlins to finish up the season. And I don't know how. I mean, you would think that they could win.
Oh my God, how are they going to win 3 games?
I don't know.
It just occurred to me.
It's
Nationals leaving everything on the field in a 5-game stretch that should have been much more intense than it's going to be. And then the team that's been absolutely giving the Phillies fits all season long. You know, like to everyone else, they're just harmless last place Marlins, but to the Phillies, they're absolute kryptonite. How are they going to win 3 games?
I don't know.
In these eight games, they could so easily go 2-6 in that stretch.
Uh-huh.
Very easy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. And Washington, despite the fact that their fans don't really come out, I mean, it's not an easy place to play at this point, you know, especially here this last week of the season. And I'll be going to the game on Tuesday, the first game of the doubleheader with the kids and all that. We talked about that on the last episode. So I'm at least looking forward to getting out to a Phillies game this year. But there, I'm not expecting much. You know, I'm not going in there thinking this is a game. These are games the Phillies should reasonably be expected to win, because the Nationals are going to be playing really hard this week. And I don't think JT Realmuto is going to play in every game. I wanted to get your thoughts on the fact that they did not start JT Realmuto in the first game of this series in Cleveland, despite having the DH. I know he's played a ton, man. He's played a ton of games behind the plate. I totally get wanting to rest him a little bit, not making him get behind the plate. And you know, they obviously want to keep him beyond next year, and I think an extension is definitely coming this offseason. It certainly sounds that way based on stuff Matt Klentak has said and JT Realmuto has said this week. So I get it. You don't want to burn this guy out now, especially from this point forward. But on Friday, knowing that you basically needed a sweep in order to stay alive, in order to keep your season alive, the fact that they didn't even have him as a designated hitter really tells me that despite them saying that they were going to go out and try and win every game and that they felt they were still alive, that they really didn't feel like they were still alive for a playoff spot and were looking out towards their long-term future. And I guess, I don't know, how do you feel about that? Because I know that the season is pretty much over. I didn't really expect them to win all three games here in Cleveland, but, you know, they're telling us one thing and then doing something else, which is kind of annoying.
Has there ever been a baseball team that's been like, all right, you guys know what you're looking at. We know what we're looking at. You can see what's happening on the field, what we're doing, how we're deploying players, what we're saying, and it all ends in the same way. The idea of we're not obviously going to make it. Like, we're not mathematically eliminated, but we're all looking at the same team, and this isn't going to happen this year. There's never been a team that's come forward and said that. And to be honest, I would be kind of refreshing.
Yeah.
To get that level of honesty. I don't expect the Phillies to be that honest. I don't expect them to be that communicative.
Yeah.
To be honest, if I'm being honest. So I mean, that team will never be the Phillies, but they've done pretty much everything shy of that to this point.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, look, guys, we're all on the same team here.
Yeah.
You know, not literally, but we know what's happening out there.
Yeah.
And we know those numbers have, you know, maybe last week it really like locked in without actually locking in. For me, I think it was Jason Vargas giving up that grand slam to Christian Vasquez. You know, it wasn't that.
Yeah.
I was thinking maybe beforehand, but I was.
That was,
you know,
the moment,
hey,
though.
Hey, maybe.
Yeah.
You know, you turn on a Phillies game and don't feel stupid for doing it,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
That's the idea. Because you do. You enter a certain mindset when the team you follow is eliminated and wasn't potentially going to be eliminated in the regular season, you know, based on earlier projections. You enter a certain mindset where you're just like, huh. Well, now I'm just watching it because I like baseball.
Yeah.
Now I'm just watching it because I'm a supporter of this laundry. yeah, you got to work that out. And your head's like, oh, this is because we talked about earlier this season. It's tough to watch a game in a vacuum without thinking, okay, we got to win this game and the next four, or we got to win seven of the next nine or whatever. A win is never just a win. And that's kind of the mindset you fall into when your team's eliminated. So I think we're essentially there, and we've essentially been there. But man, it's just, it's tough. It's kind of tough to take the Phillies seriously when they,
yeah.
when they have to trot back out there and be like, you know, we're giving it every day. You know, we're giving 100% out there. We're battling. We know we're barely in this thing, but we want our fans to believe in us, blah, blah, blah. You know, all the cliches come out. But then you do something like, well, we
yeah.
have a DH available, but JT's not playing tonight.
Just, I mean, that's the white flag. I mean, and
I get it.
Yeah,
no,
I get it. Yeah, I get it. I mean, I don't want to kill the team for not
it's
starting
fine.
JT Realmuto, but it was just when the team is telling you they're still in it and they're fighting for every win, and then you go out and you don't start Realmuto, at least at the DH, where he can sit on the bench for all of, with the exception of about like 15, 20 minutes during the course of a 3-hour game. You know, I mean, that's, he can get a night off when he's, you know, when he's playing the DH. And so, yeah, I'm not going to kill the Phillies for doing it, because they realized at that point, that's the moment I realized that they realized the 2019 season was over. You know, that was...
You know, I mean, not to completely jump off topic, but I'm not. It's just jump across Pattison Ave, I guess. And a couple years ago, when the Sixers had completely bottomed out and this, you know, the whole process was beginning, they started the season using the hashtag Together We Build. And I was like, I think that's the closest thing I've ever seen a sports franchise come to saying, like, we are going to suck. We all know we're going to suck, But, like, look, we hired a marketing firm, and we got this positive spin on this that's real and true. And, like, look how, like, crazy that fan base got over that. You know, there's much more moving parts to that than I'm making it sound like. But just the idea that they start out saying, like, look, together we build. We suck. It's not going to happen this year. We all know it. And, you know, I don't expect, again, that level of honesty from the Phillies. But, yeah, it's like it kind of ended this week before math could get to it.
So do you think that Christian Vasquez home run was the moment, like, the final nail was driven into the coffin on the field? Because it does to me. That home run in the final game of that two-game series in Philadelphia just felt like, wow, yeah, that's just absolutely not happening.
Yeah, I think that pretty much sealed the deal. I mean, I feel like a pretty standard Phillies starting pitcher performance right now is, look okay enough to, like, not turn people off immediately. Occasionally there's some struggles in the first inning, but nothing insurmountable. But, like, by the time you hit, like, fourth or fifth inning, you know, something like that happens. Something dramatic, something cataclysmic goes down. And I think that was around the time that that Jason Vargas gave up that grand slam. And it was just like, yeah. And for some reason, you just had that thought, like, I don't know why, but this is it. Like, this is the moment. Or, like, I'm tired of watching this. I'm tired of watching exactly this. And what reason do I have to think anything's going to be different tomorrow? So, yeah, that was I think there's a reason that felt like the last dart that brought this team to its knees, because it's just we've seen that too many times, and it's too late in the season to recover.
How damaging would it be for this team to finish behind the Mets in the National League East too? I feel like just, you know, even if they finish with a winning record, let's say they finish 82-80 or 83-79. What if the Mets win 84 or 85 games? You know, what if they finish up? What if they finish up here with a better record than the Phillies? I think that's going to be really hard to take. I think it's going to be really hard to stomach. And I don't know that that's going to make any difference on decisions that get made this offseason. But last year, the Nationals passed the Phillies in the standings at the very end of the season, even though the Phillies were ahead of the Nationals for most of the season. It's going to feel kind of the same way, but I think worse this time, because I really feel like the Phillies have been a better team than New York for most of the season. And when all is said and done, to be looking up at three other teams in the division and not just the Braves and the Nationals, that's going to feel worse to me. I mean,
not only two, which would have been
pretty bad.
I mean, it's not some. Yes, I think that's a point, and I think that comparison is it sounds like something that would circulate the news cycle for a week or 2 weeks after the season, where it was like, oh, you know, comparing the Phillies and the Mets. How could the Mets finish above the Phillies? Does this add another level to the Phillies' futility this year? You know, we talked last week about whether or not we care if they finish with a certain record. And I believe Liz was saying, oh, I want to see them finish with a winning record. And I, at this point, was saying, I don't care. But compared to, I would say finishing with a winning record is more important than finishing behind a particular team or finishing in a particular place. I mean, if the Phillies finish with a losing record, which isn't really something we've discussed in depth on this podcast, even I can, you got to burn that whole, department. You got to do something.
Scorched
big.
Earth, babies. Yeah, take it all down.
I mean, I was one of the only ones in the early part of the season saying that, like, yeah, maybe Gabe Kapler doesn't make it through this season, because if he can't win with this team being so different from last year's team, which is to say improved, supposedly on paper, then yeah, I mean, what else do you need to see from a guy? I mean, like, yeah, it's only 2 years as a manager, but you know, you can't win with the scrappy team that seems like it's young farmhands and young players who are finally coming together, and also you can't win with a bunch of free agents and trades that really improve the team in some key areas and in some very serious ways. At what point is it like, okay, what other kind of team do we want to try to lose with?
Right, exactly. And I wrote a piece for The Good Fight this week. I know a lot of people are going to talk about injuries and how injuries affected this team. And you look at the other teams, there's a website that's called mangamesloss.com, where they calculate how many wins above replacement different teams lost due to injuries this year. And the Phillies have lost the fifth most wins above replacement to injuries this season. When you look at McCutchen and you look at the relief pitchers, and I guess Arrieta is factored into that. The four teams ahead of them, the Rays, the Astros, the Dodgers, and the Twins, are all fighting for the playoffs, or at least have at least 90 wins this season. The other team that suffered a ton of injuries, the New York Yankees, have lost more games to injured players than any other team in baseball this year. So, you know, injuries play a part of it. I think one of the big reasons why this team has really struggled this year is not so much the bullpen, because the bullpen, yes, they lost 7/8 of their bullpen, but the bullpen has actually been about league average this year. It hasn't been a strength of the team, but if you look at the relief pitching so far this season, they've been right about the middle of the pack. And you know, that's hard to believe when you've got guys like Mike Morin and Jared Hughes and Blake Parker in there. But, you know, it's kind of funny when we think about what really went wrong with this team this year. It's not going to be – here's the number I was looking for. The bullpen's ERA of 4.47 coming into the weekend was ninth in the National League, which was better than the Mets and Nationals and only slightly worse than Atlanta's. And, in fact, the average bullpen ERA in the National League was 4.54. So the Phillies was actually a little bit better than league average, according to ERA. It's because the big hitters like Hoskins and Kingery and Gene Segura didn't really do enough, and because the starting pitching was such a problem, two areas where there really wasn't a whole lot of injury problems.
Yeah, that's yeah. I mean,
yeah, that sucks, man.
I can absolutely get on board with that. It's interesting. Yeah, like I'm sitting here and I almost apologized in the middle of my last comment, saying like I made that about Gabe Kapler, and I did not even intend to or desire to. He's a factor in this team's lack of success, I would say. But yeah, the injuries and everything you just said. I mean, this is a real cornucopia of undesirable outcomes, I guess you could say, at this point. And you know, now we're just at the end of it.
Yeah.
And it is really surprising to hear how middle of the pack the Phillies bullpen is. But I've actually been looking at a lot of the team stats over the past couple days, and the Phillies really are their ranking among all major league teams, or even in just the NL, really does tell the story in the broadest sense of what happened with this team and what the kind of team we've been looking at. I mean, it feels like this team wins a series, loses a series, wins a series, loses the next two series. You know, they had a great month of May, I believe, when they went 17-11, and then they lost Andrew McCutchen in early June and had their worst month of the season thus far when they went 11-16. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I bring that up because every ranking, they are just a little bit, it seems like they're
just a little bit better than average. Yeah.
A little bit better or a little bit worse
yeah.
than average. Like they did everything just totally down the middle, and occasionally it was a little bit better and occasionally it was a little worse. And that's how you wind up with a team that's, you know, 5 wins over .500, I guess, at this point, until the next, 5 minutes from now, they're 4 games over .500.
I think they're 4 over. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, that at that point it's just like, yeah, that's yeah, they didn't get the hits they needed, they didn't get the output from the players they signed that they thought they were going to get, and for all those reasons, yeah, we could very much be looking at a team with a losing record by the end of 2019. Oh, so.
All right, well, when we come back, we're going to take a look at 2020 just a little bit and consider our options and take a look back at a couple other players from 2019 and, you know, wonder if their status, how well their status is secure, but where we think they are now in their process of developing, coming up here as the Phillies enter an extremely pivotal offseason. So we'll talk about some of that stuff up next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So as we continue to kind of pick up the pieces of this 2019 season, obviously there is still a week of games left to play, but you know, there's really not a whole lot of sense in breaking down the whole week.
Yeah, Phillies have a 0.2% chance to win the wild card and less than 0.1% chance to win the World Series. I don't know if you got to play these games, frankly. I don't like those odds.
Well, they have the magic number on the wild card. They have their elimination number is 2. So any combination of Nationals and Brewers victories and Phillies losses, and that's it.
Do they play 2 games this week? Please say no.
I don't think they do. They'll just cancel them all. So there's 6 back of the wild card. By the way, the Chicago Cubs, what a collapse by the Cubs here down the stretch. They're now 4 games out of the wild card. They're They're done. They've lost six in a row. This is Joe Madden's swan song with the Cubs. They are not wishing Joe Madden well in Chicago at this point. He's under a lot of fire for his bullpen decisions, and some of the stuff that he has said is some of the kind of stuff we've heard Gabe Kapler saying. I mean, some of the stuff about the bullpen was he said something this week like, we determine our bullpen matchups before the game based on the other team's hitters, and, you know, sometimes it doesn't work out, but you can't blame a bad process. And I, you know,
brutal.
That's absolutely brutal because, and I will say this too, Joe Madden has made some royal screw ups with his bullpen in really big spots. I mean, I think we all remember how he handled the bullpen in game 7 of the World Series with Aroldis Chapman and all that, leaving him in too long or bringing him in too early. I think it was he brought him in too early, and they almost lost that World Series because of a stupid Joe Madden decision. And nobody talks about, because most people have forgotten the 2008 World Series that don't live in Philadelphia. Remember when they restarted Game 5 and everybody was worried about David Price coming in? This is back when he was a rookie and just shutting, you know, they were bringing him in out of the bullpen and shutting the Phillies down right off the bat. And for some reason, Joe Madden did not start off the game with David Price. He tried to have Grant Balfour go another inning, and then he went to a couple other slop-tossing left-handers. And then in the seventh inning, he didn't bring David Price in. He brought somebody else in. And then finally, he brings David Price into the game in the eighth inning when the Phillies already have the lead, and Price, like, just strikes out the side ridiculously. I mean, looked impressive doing. I mean, I still can't understand why David Price didn't start off that restarted game and give them like three innings of 98 mile an hour fastballs and sliders that would scare small children, you know? So Joe Madden he's never been my favorite manager, and the Phillies are undoubtedly taking some heat for how they're finishing up the season, but my goodness, the Cubs with their collapse here in the last few weeks.
Anybody who has who takes issue with how Gabe Kapler runs things, can you imagine Joe Madden being the next Phillies manager? I feel like there's a 0% chance that would happen. But like, oh my God, can you even imagine? It feels like to a degree we can't even fathom. Would all of the analytic, that whole narrative, just go? Oh my God, it would just take off. If you think it's insufferable now, it really doesn't feel like. I mean, I'm not a sports radio listener, but typically when like the takes that they typically use in their medium reach a certain level, they'll trickle down into places where people who don't even listen to the radio can see them. And right. It feels like this year the anti-analytic stuff hasn't even really been, you know, Phillies have just not even mostly been a part of the discussion for most of it. So, but it's like Joe Madden stepping in there. Oh my God. Even if you were like, Joe Madden's going to take the Phillies to the playoffs for 5 straight years, I would be like, yeah, I don't know if it's worth it, frankly.
We're good. Yeah.
To hear all those. Yeah. You know, I was looking at the standings the other day, and the Cubs, yeah, they've felt like they've been getting their clocks cleaned by the Cardinals just from watching this recent series, but they're actually pretty evenly split with them all year. But when I was looking at the standings, I couldn't believe how far the Rockies had fallen.
Like, oh, yeah.
Earlier in the season, they were looking like, you know, they could be at least part of the wild card picture. Mm-hmm. I like a lot of the Rockies players. I like Trevor Story. I like Charlie Blackman. I like Nolan Arenado, obviously.
Sure.
They're in last.
Yeah.
Man, they're buried.
They're 67 and 89. They're 33 games out. Yeah.
They're really bad.
Yeah.
They're the third worst team in the NL.
Well, they had great pitching last year, and all that pitching fell apart this year. Just absolutely. And I wasn't sure about I didn't get a lot right coming into this season, but two things I got right were the Braves being good and the Rockies not being good, just because I don't trust the Rockies pitching staff. You got to show me more than one year in a row, you know? And
how can you? Yeah.
And poor Kyle Freeland looked like an amazing starter last year, and he was terrible this year. He was absolute. Remember the Phillies lit him up. I think he pitched well against the Phillies in the game in Colorado, and then they destroyed him in Philadelphia. When they came to town. So yeah, the Rockies they were a weird team this year, and it is amazing. It's amazing what the Brewers are doing. They're doing all of this with Christian Yelich getting hurt. Christian Yelich goes out and they go on a rampage. You just don't know with sports, man. Anyway,
I mean, you know, there's a team like that every year. You know, everybody loses. There's injuries and key injuries, and like Mike Trout going out. Well, the Angels, that's kind of a bad example because they are never really in the playoff picture anyway. But yeah. I mean, the Brewers. That's I don't want to say it's luck because like they really. The team rallied when he went down. Ryan Braun put his jersey on and hit a home run the next day.
Yeah.
I mean, Brewers are very much the wild card. They're an ideal wild card team. You know, they've got enough depth to survive the removal of their best player, and they've got enough momentum, which I know we debate the existence of a lot, but like, you know, this time of year, it's a lot easier to believe in, and they just have it.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
they're an ideal wild card team.
Yeah, man. You mentioned the Angels just a second ago with Mike Trout. Are they ever going to make it to a World Series? I mean, is Mike Trout ever going to play in a World Series? They're 70-86. Like, they're 16 games under 500, 32 games out in the American League West. I mean, they didn't even sniff the wild. They're 22 games out of the wild card. You know, yeah. I mean, they didn't even sniff it at any point this season. And he re-signed there. He's going to be an Angel for life. And how is that team ever going to be relevant with him there? I don't see it.
Honestly, when that happened, it's such an indicator of how, I guess, how little he was prioritizing winning a World Series.
Yeah.
I mean, it must have been, right? Like, what could they have told him based on what has already happened, what had already happened to that point that would make him think like, all right, this is where I'm going to not only spend the rest of my career, but I'm actually going to finally get to the, not even just the World Series, but the playoffs.
Yeah.
What is he? Has he played like in one
playoff, one playoff
game
series,
career,
three games.
Series? Yeah.
They got swept by the Orioles in three games in a division series. That's Mike Trout's entire postseason.
That's criminal.
Career. It is.
But like it tells you he didn't want to come to Philadelphia, didn't want to come to New York. Certainly could have. You know.
Well, the funny thing is, he didn't even have to make a decision this offseason. He still would have been signed. He wouldn't have been a free agent this offseason. It would have been the following offseason.
Yep.
That's what's crazy about it. And I really wonder. Would he make the same decision now that he made last offseason? He probably would have, because, you know, what was it, $400 million that he signed for? I forget exactly how much it was, but, I mean, the money is ridiculous, no doubt about it. But, you know, it's amazing that he's going to be with that team his entire life, and they just cannot put a winning team on the field around him.
God,
it's unbelievable.
He signed a 12-year, roughly $430 million extension.
I mean, I understand that, but man,
I mean, if you're thinking about it from the terms of, you know, trying to get paid what you think you're worth and not having to worry about making that kind of decision, and if you're somewhere where you like being, then like that's the right choice. But if you want to be a World Series champion, I don't know how you would ever pick the Angels. I mean, why did Shohei Ohtani go to Los Angeles to the Angels? Because he wanted to play for a West Coast team,
yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
and they just, I don't know, had the best pitch. But what did they tell him?
Right.
You know?
Yeah. It's just, oh, my goodness. All right, let's get back on the Phillies here for just a few minutes. And let's talk about the way the Phillies are going to improve themselves here this offseason. I think two names that we have talked a lot about and we're going to continue to talk about until free agency is over, which probably won't occur until the middle of next year, is, it's great. Gerrit Cole and Anthony Rendon. They are obviously the two big names. I'm amazed that Rendon and the Nationals have yet to get together on a contract extension. I really thought that would have happened before Rendon hit free agency. I still think the odds are better that Rendon returns to DC. I can't see them letting him go. After letting Harper go, I feel like the reason they felt like they could let Harper go is because they wanted to keep Rendon, and they knew they would have, you know, Juan Soto signed for a long time and all that. But at the moment, Gerrit Cole and Anthony Rendon are going to hit the free agent market. And I think the question a lot of Phillies fans are asking is, we're probably going to have to choose between the two of these guys. I don't see any way the Phillies are able to afford both Gerrit Cole and Rendon if they plan on staying under the luxury tax, which I imagine is something they probably want to do, although it really shouldn't be that big of a stumbling block for a team that has as much money as the Phillies do. If you had to choose between one or the other, would you choose Cole, or would you, let's just assume for the sake of this argument that both are going to require the same amount of money, and probably Cole gets maybe two fewer years of a contract, or you know, one fewer year of a contract than Rendon, because pitchers typically get shorter deals than position players do. If you had to choose between Cole and Rendon, who are you choosing? And I ask that because I think we need to consider who some of the other options are at these positions too.
I'm most assuredly picking Gerrit Cole.
Yeah.
You know, I do worry. I brought this up to you earlier today, just because I do worry now that like this is a team that didn't think Dallas Keuchel was the type of pitcher they wanted to sign. You know, granted there were a couple of X factors there. This was, you know, the whole signing him in the middle of the year thing. Maybe they got scared off by that. We saw Craig Kimbrell. He never became the closer the Cubs needed him to be, and has been part of the, you know, reason we were just talking about them not being the team they thought they were going to be. But I do, yeah, I hope that they are looking at Gerrit Cole, because how do you not enter this free agency pool thinking starting pitching is a place is where we need to start?
Yeah.
You know, this is the starting point for us, because this offense has been disappointing. But I mean, if they came out next year with Harper, Realmuto, Segura, like those guys all in the lineup, I would not be discouraged. I would, if anything, I'd be thinking, all right, they got the dud out of their system, and now we're going to see the real version of these guys. We still, this year's going to come to an end, and we still won't see the fully weaponized version of this lineup.
Yeah.
I think it's way more possible. Like, the pieces are in place for this offense to find the offense it's supposed to be, whereas the pitching, we know what it is. We knew that before this year started. So I think that's where you got to aim for. And Gerrit Cole's the name that everybody's going to be after, who's after starting pitching. And, you know, I don't want to say that their success rests on signing him, but boy, that would be a big first step. Like there's going to be moves made in that regard, whether it's Gerrit Cole or not. And it might as well be Gerrit Cole. His ground ball percentages are lower than Dallas Keuchel, who is an infamous ground ball pitcher. But like,
he still also generates a ton of strikeouts too. Yeah.
Yeah. So I at this point, you know, we've been talking for we about, you know, matchups and does this guy fit into what we think a good baseball team. At this point, Gerrit Cole, you know, he gets guys out.
Yeah.
Like that's, let's start with that.
Yeah.
He's got a 2.0. His ERA is barely over 2.
Yeah.
In 2019, or I'm sorry, I'm looking at Gerrit or Dallas Keuchel's numbers. Gerrit Cole's numbers are 2.78. He's got 2.78 ERA through 90 and 2/3 innings. I mean, like, this he's an effective pitcher. Like, you gotta start thinking just as broadly as that.
Yep.
Because tonight we watched Vince Velasquez look okay. You know, he threw a quick bottom of the third inning. Like, that was great. I was like, oh, wow, a quick inning from Vince Velasquez. It's always nice. And then in the fifth inning, you know, he got pounded and had to leave the game. We talked about having seen that so many times, and it's time to see something new, maybe some proven success, regardless of how.
Yeah.
Regardless of what model he falls into. It's like, yeah, Gerrit Cole seems like a good target. And as far as third base, I mean, I agree with you. I don't think the Nationals are going to let Rendon get away. And if the Phillies signed Rendon, it would be cool. But with Alec Bohm playing in the Arizona Fall League, I mean, I know that's a name we talked about a lot earlier in the season, but like, this is one of their top prospects now. We talked about what kind of impact we were hoping to see Spencer Howard this year, and Alec Bohm and Spencer Howard are the Phillies' two top prospects. I mean, I feel like you can cover for an absence of a Rendon-like player at third base until Bohm gets there. And, you know, I'm not saying he's going to be Rendon in output, but, you know, if he's your best prospect position player and he's coming up to play third base, then I'm cool with that being like Scott Kingery or whatever. I mean, that's what you have Scott Kingery for. They've been trying to get him to be a more, you know, the most versatile player on any field he's on. He can cover third base, and they should be getting enough production from your Realmutos, from your Harpers, from your Hoskins, to not need a Rendon at third base. And, you know, to me, I think it's clear the need at starting pitching is much more intense than a need at third.
I would say this, and I agree with you that I think they absolutely need starting pitching, and they need a high end starting pitcher more than they maybe need the top third baseman in the league. And listen, if you don't go after Rendon, yes, you could start Alec Bohm. And I think I think when it comes to Alec Bohm, you don't need to worry about an at-bat limit like you might have to worry about an innings limit for a guy like Spencer Howard if you're thinking about making an internal move to improve your starting pitching rotation that way. There's no way the Phillies can say, we're not really going to be all that interested in the starting pitching market here because we feel like Spencer Howard's going to be up at some point next year. There's no way they can go into next season thinking that, and I don't think they will.
Do you trust this team's evaluation of pitchers?
Not at all.
When it comes to outside the organization, like bringing in free agents or its own prospects, I mean, it's kind of tough.
Yeah.
It's kind of tough to get behind them at this point.
It is. And, but on the other hand, you also can't just load up your team with a bunch of veterans either. I mean, you do have to supplement from some of the youngsters. So if you don't sign Rendon at third base and you do decide to look outside the organization, Josh Donaldson is really the only other third base free agent that would provide any kind of impact.
You're not ready to have the Mike Moustakas conversation?
Didn't he
again?
Sign a multi-year deal with
Milwaukee? I saw him. Maybe the list I was looking at was out of date. I don't know.
I'll double check that. But I had a feeling that he signed a deal with a multi-year deal with the Brewers, but I could very well be wrong about that.
We both know it is.
No, it's a one-year agreement. You're right. So Moustakas is a free agent as well. So yeah, you have Moustakas there. And as far as free agent pitchers go, if you don't go out and sign Gerrit Cole, there are pitchers like Cole Hamels. There's Hey, Dallas Keuchel's going to be a free agent.
No. I would be down with a Gerrit Cole and Cole Hamels acquisitions. I think that's totally within the realm of possibility. I mean, Wade Miley will be available.
And I liked him. I liked Wade Miley this offseason. I talked about him a little bit. Steven Strasburg could exercise his player option. I think that is a thing that could very easily happen. Is Strasburg opting out of his player option, 31 years old. He's older than I thought. I didn't realize Strasburg was 31 already, but he played college, and so when he started, he didn't last in the minors very long, but he was a little on the older side when he came up. But you've got Hyunjin Ryu, who has largely been pretty awesome. He has a 2.35 ERA this year for the Dodgers.
Zach Wheeler will be available as well.
Yep. So there are some options there.
Yeah, there are.
Where you could, if you decided not to go after Gerrit Cole, you could sign a couple of those other guys. You could sign Hyunjin Ryu. You could sign Cole Hamels. And hey, maybe Steven Strasburg does come around. I don't think Strasburg would get quite as much as Gerrit Cole because Cole really is head and shoulders above anybody else that you could go out and get. So, there are some options in both ways there. But, they're going to have to improve in those areas because the offense needs something. You can't just rely on Bryce Harper to hit home runs for you. They have been overly reliant on Bryce Harper in the middle of the lineup to produce for them. I think they have some kind of insane record when he hits a home run and when he has an RBI. I'll look that up too because it's pretty good. I mean, the problem has been that they have not gotten enough production from the other parts of the lineup this season. And, that's just, they've got to figure that out. I mean, you can't make a lot of changes to this offense. It's pretty much going to be what it's going to be.
It's interesting. And this is also indicative of the surface level success the Phillies have had. If you're looking at it like, okay, well, they have a winning record. They've been over 500 the entire season. It's been really fragmented. It's been really cobbled together. And part of that is because none of these guys have been hot at the same time. Rhys Hoskins looked really good in April. Cesar Hernandez was really hot in May. Scott Kingery took May and part of June. He missed part of May with an injury. Gene Segura was hitting really well in July. And JT Realmuto had absolutely caught on fire in August. But none of this happened around the same time. And that's really prevented them from, the infamous win streak we're sick of talking about. It's prevented them from just overtaking once they've fallen behind and really contributed to a lot of the sinking out of first place. They were in first place this year, a significant number of games more than last year. But once they left, the last time they were alone in first place was in early June. And they never sniffed it again after that.
Oh, yeah.
They never even made an argument about coming back. So that kind of told you, this team's successes have been very isolated. And I think that's going to be a product of just starting fresh again next year. But you're right. It's also just got to be some guys are going to have to change their approaches or something because I maintain that there are good players on this team, but they did not play like good players for most of the season.
No, and I'm going to, when we come back, I want to look at some of the second half numbers from some of the guys in the lineup. And really, there were two guys that had good second halves, and other than that, it really was kind of a wasteland. But the stat I wanted to pull up, Corey Seidman from NBC Sports Philly had this note: the Phillies are 24-7 when Bryce Harper homers, and they're 42-17 when he drives in a run. That also means they're 20 games under 500, 37-57 when he does not drive in a run. That the Phillies played like a 64-win team when Harper does not have an RBI. Harper had a really good year this year, and I think, you know, maybe on the next podcast we should take a long look at Bryce Harper's season when all's said and done, because that's going to be one of the few good stories to come out of here of 2019. He really was very good here in his first season in Philadelphia. But we'll step away, we'll take a quick break, and we'll get into all that other stuff up next here on Hit Season. And we're back on Hit and Season. So, Justin, a couple things here to wrap up. I want to ask about a couple guys in particular with how they have finished up here the second half, and I want to pick your brain on what your thoughts about these two young guys, these two guys who came up in the Phillies system, who we think are pieces to build around, and is it fair to be wondering, you know, where are they, and how important are they to the future of this team? And let's talk about Scott Kingery, and let's talk about Reese Hoskins. And Paul Boyer had a really good piece in The Good Fight that came out on Sunday night about Scott Kingery and his struggles. He was looking real good for a real long time. And in the second half of the season, he's hitting .224 with a .285 on-base percentage and a .414 slugging percentage in 62 games, 261 plate appearances. That's the second most plate appearances on the team in the second half. Weighted runs created of 77, and he's been worth 0.5 wins above replacement, according to Fangraphs. That's pretty bad. Striking out 30% of his plate appearances. That's second highest on the team, only to Sean Rodriguez. The other guy, of course, is Reese Hoskins. Only has 9 home runs in the second half of the season since the All-Star break. Just 9 home runs. He's hit .190 in the second half with a .330 on-base percentage and a .394 slugging percentage. Weighted runs created of 88. He's been worth 0 wins above replacement in the entire second half of the season. Now, the wins above replacement number, listen, with the fielding metrics the way they are, I throw them in there because I think it's important to add them. You can't look at them and just say, hey, that guy sucks, he's been worth 0 wins above replacement. I don't think wins above replacement takes into account the fact a guy can play multiple different positions, and it doesn't take into account the flexibility that Kingery has provided this team here in the second half with all the injuries. That being said, Kingery and Hoskins have not been very productive here in the second half of the season. And with Hoskins, he's your 4-hole hitter. Kingery's probably been your 6-hole hitter, and it would have been really helpful if Kingery had been able to hit near the top of the lineup when McCutchen went down, and he just wasn't able to pull that off. So what are you thinking about these two guys? How important should they be on the 2020 Phillies? Like, can Reese Hoskins be the number 4-hole hitter on a really good baseball team? You know, is Scott Kingery a guy that we are thinking maybe, are we thinking twice at all about Scott Kingery's future with this team? Not that they're not going to keep him for 2020, but do you have any doubts after a seemingly very encouraging first half that maybe that was a little bit of a mirage?
I'm more worried about the mirage effect with Hoskins than I am with Kingery. I feel like Kingery took enough steps this year to still be considered a part of this team moving forward.
Yeah.
And honestly, I feel like the Phillies have too much invested in Kingery at this point. Hoskins came up to be a slugger, to hit home runs. And, you know, we kind of labeled him as streaky because of how amazing the pace was at which he was hitting those home runs when he first came up, and then he would just disappear. This year, it really hasn't been streaky. This year, it's been more of a disappearing act. I mean, at this point, I'm willing to redefine Reese Hoskins less as somebody you build around and more as somebody you just build with, which I think puts him into that Pat Burrell corral that you've been touting for since potentially last year, saying like, is he Pat Burrell or is he something more?
And right now, he's Pat Burrell.
Frankly, yeah, there's just nothing else to see at this moment. And it's been less streaky, and it's been more just cratering with him this year. And that's been really unfortunate. So I don't know how much of a centerpiece you can consider him at this point. I think you got to just, you know, hope that you have something of a slugger on your hands. Because obviously I feel like it's there's not a big chance the Phillies get rid of either of these guys in too big a hurry. But you got to be a little more mindful about how you use that label at this point, because Rhys Hoskins, looking at his numbers, then you want to build around him. I mean, I think he's a supplement. You know, he's
a nice player. Someone,
yeah, he might supercharge your offense for like 2 weeks or something. But for the most part, you got to be able to deal with stretches like this, or, you know, worst case scenario, a guy who's just completely in his own head. I mean, some guys will have like a terrible time like this, go into the off season, talk about their mental health exercises that they adopted, some new approaches, whatever, come back looking healthy again. But at this point, he is lost in his own mind, and you can just see it, not just in the numbers, but just in his approach and his frustrations visible. So that's why I'm saying right now, Kingery is somebody that they've been focused on since the beginning. They gave him that contract, which everyone's, you know, you're going to be reminded of that until the day it's over. But he got that 6-year extension before playing in the big leagues at all. And they've been trying to turn him into Ben Zobrist since day one. And you know what? Last year, it didn't look too great, you know, when they were like, we're going to put him in the outfield. Right now, he's going to play here. He's going to play here. And we were like, oh, you got to give him some consistency somewhere. Phillies were like, no,
yeah.
we're not going to do that. We're going to have him play. He's going to be our moving weapon. We're going to move him where we need him. We're going to move him where we want him. We're a team that's going to be playing the matchups, and he's going to be a big part of that. And you know what? Maybe that slowed his development a little bit, but he looked good. He took steps forward this year that were pretty encouraging. Now, you know, he bottomed out as well, but I mean, show me somebody in this lineup who did not bottom out at some point for a significant amount of time. So yeah, hopefully he comes back as a more consistent player next year, but the Phillies are asking a lot more of him to be consistent. Whereas with Rhys Hoskins, it's like play first, hit home runs. And he's struggling to do that.
Yeah, no, he's not been providing anything off defensively either. I mean, but we all knew that about Rhys Hoskins, and I don't want to be too hard on the guy, but now he's had two full seasons in the majors, and you look at a guy like Pete Alonso, who's crushing 49 home runs this season and 50 home runs, and it's hard to watch a guy in Hoskins. I think the most disturbing thing is, as the rest of Major League Baseball has seen home runs skyrocket, Rhys Hoskins has hit 5 fewer home runs this year than last year.
I mean, that's got to mean that he's just not touching the ball.
Yeah.
You know?
His strikeout rate is only slightly higher than it was last year. His walk rate is up. It's up by 3.5%. The problem, you know, as you look at some of the numbers with Rhys Hoskins, his line drive rate is better. His ground ball rate is a little bit better. His fly ball rate's okay. You know, just the home run per fly balls are down. His pull rate and his opposite field rate are about the same. According to Fangraphs, his hard hit rate went up, but he doesn't have a low batting average on balls in play. He pops a lot of balls up. It's really hard to pin down exactly what the problem is with Rhys Hoskins.
And that's why you can honestly feel confident talking about mental approach issues.
Yeah.
Because when everything's just kind of like the same, then he's not doing anything different, and he's just not doing it well.
And how much did John Mailey affect his struggles? And you know, you wonder if a new hitting coach comes in, Charlie Manuel. I mean, we talked about Charlie Manuel and how much help he could provide. Who knows? You know how much a guy like Charlie can do in just a month and a half. You know, that's not enough time to quote unquote fix a guy, but there are some things that Hoskins needs to get fixed. And I agree with you as far as Kingery is concerned. Matt Klentak was on a podcast with Entercom, John Heyman podcast, where he was asked who the MVP of the team was. And of course they mentioned JT Realmuto first, but Scott Kingery was the second player out of his mouth because of the flexibility that he provided, all while doing it for most of the season with some pretty good offensive numbers. And so I think anybody who thinks that Scott Kingery is automatically just going to be the everyday second baseman next year, I think it's going to be hard for the Phillies to bring back Cesar Hernandez at the salary that he's going to draw as an ARB4 guy. But I think they really value Kingery being able to move all over the diamond. I don't know that they're going to make him an everyday guy. I think he's going to continue to be a super utility guy.
I think anybody waiting for Scott Kingery to have a consistent position is going to be waiting a long time.
Yes.
That's just not why he's there.
Yeah.
You know, that's just not
when
how
he's proven he can do it. You know, that's the thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he only made that worse for himself this year.
That's the thing. If you're working a job you don't like very much, but you're really good at it, you're gonna have a hard time getting moved on to something.
And
else.
We don't even know if he doesn't like it. I mean, if he didn't like it, you'd probably see that.
Yeah,
he wouldn't have necessarily taken a step forward this year. But
yeah.
In terms of Rhys Hoskins, I mean, you're talking about like numbers being pretty much the same as last year. You look at his numbers this year, month to month. This is a guy who had an OPS over 1,000 in April, and it's down to 643. He had a 643 OPS in August. So like month to month, you can just see him drop off. And you're right that there's nothing like somebody like Charlie Manuel is going to be able to do with a couple of weeks to fix somebody. I'm not even saying that it was like the fault of a hitting coach to have done that.
Right.
This just seems like something else.
Yeah.
Like when you're hitting 161 as a major league starter, like that is something is broken inside of you somewhere.
Yeah.
So this is another one of those areas where you're like, we're going to learn something after the season at some point. We must.
Maybe.
Because this is,
yeah,
this is too inexplicable to not have an explanation.
That would at least be a little comforting if there was some kind of external force that was resulting in some of this. But it's also one of the reasons why going out and getting somebody like Anthony Rendon makes a lot of sense. And I agree with you. I would go after Gerrit Cole before Rendon, but Rhys Hoskins in the middle of that lineup was supposed to form a 1-2 punch with Bryce Harper, and it just didn't happen. It just didn't happen. The Phillies
happened once.
Yeah,
that
right.
Game?
Yeah.
Walked Harper to get to Hoskins and hit a grand slam.
But I mean,
we were like, so many times in the future, this is going to be us.
It just didn't work out, man. And you know, they just did not get enough consistent thump in the middle of that lineup. And obviously losing McCutchen at the top of the lineup hurt. They never got a leadoff hitter either. But Corey Dickerson came in for a while and certainly helped in the middle of the order and took some of the pressure off of Hoskins. But they need Hoskins to be an impact bat in the middle of the lineup, unless they go out and they get somebody like Rendon or Josh Donaldson. But there's not a whole lot of other moves you can make to this offense. Gene Segura is going to be here. You're not going to get rid of, you know, you've already got an outfielder crunch. And, you know, as with JT Realmuto, his offense in the second half has been fantastic. It's been an amazing turnaround. It's one of the reasons why he might be a top five MVP candidate in the National League. But you also run into the problem when your catcher is your second best offensive player, you're going to run that guy into the ground.
Yeah.
And that's a problem. Like the Phillies experienced that with Darren Dalton a little bit in the 92-93 season, and he wore down pretty quickly because you can't play a catcher that much.
Yeah. And even if he wants to be out there,
right,
as much.
You can't do it.
So, I mean, that's an area the Phillies should probably look into upgrading as well. You know, it should not be a priority, but
backup catcher,
yeah, is definitely something they need to look at. I mean, and they gotta, and part of that is so that they have somebody they can dispatch and use who isn't going to be, you know, as ineffective as, unfortunately, Andrew Knapp has been. But at the same time, Andrew Knapp's been in 3 games in the month of September thus far. So, like, that's not going to do it. You know, if you're going to have a catcher like Realmuto, you got to be able to back him up with somebody who's capable of backing him up or capable of getting a hit now and then, you know, just somebody. It doesn't have to be a big deal. It has just to be something more than nothing.
Go get Travis d'Arnaud, you know, put him back. But, you know, because, I mean, you could put Davey Grullion, the AAA guy who had had a good power season for Lehigh Valley, but you got it. That's a guy who's inexperienced, who doesn't know how to handle a major league rotation. So there's a drawback to going that way.
But you
want
to talk about players to build around. I mean, that's Realmuto. And if he's open to an extension like he says he is, then obviously we've been saying got to lock him up. You got to plan for that.
Yeah.
And this is a team that wowed Realmuto with their, you know, quote unquote catching laboratory in spring training. They had he was amazed that they had like 4 or 5 different coaches who worked just like with the catchers. And the Phillies are a team that's always brought up good catchers, you know, like they became known for that from Dalton to Ruiz to, you know, that, who am I forgetting? Lieberthal. God.
Oh, yeah. I blanked too. I was thinking Lance Parrish? No.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they know how to take care of catchers, and you know, they have another great one on their hands here. So I think that's got to be part of the future, too. But if you want to get creative and bring in Rendon as a possible solution and play him at first instead of Hoskins, I mean, hey, you know, it depends on what the Phillies know that we don't. frankly.
That's a really good point. No, that's true. That's absolutely true. Last thing, we mentioned these two guys just a minute ago. The Phillies have a number of top prospects playing in the Arizona Fall League, and their two best prospects, Spencer Howard and Alec Bohm, are both playing in the Arizona Fall League. Bohm got off to a great start in his first game last week, had four hits in his first game. Spencer Howard, in his first game, he pitched on Friday, pitched three innings, didn't give up any runs, saw some video of him look pretty sharp on the mound. I mean, he's a good-looking young pitcher, man. And as we were talking about a little bit before, these guys are going to be on the Phillies next year. I have no doubt about the fact that we will see. I mean, we saw Adam Haseley for most of the season. We're going to see Spencer Howard or Alec Bohm and Alec Bohm on this team, provided neither one of them gets injured in any way. But the questions here about both are, when? Spencer Howard is only going to, after he's done in the Arizona Fall League, he'll probably be at around having pitched 90 to 95 innings here in 2019. So that means if you pretty much, you don't want to see a huge innings jump from him from 1 year to the next. He's not going to go from 95 innings to 190. So you're probably looking at a 140 to 150 inning limit for him in 2020. And then you have Alec Bohm, who I don't think is going to start the season with the Phillies. He'll probably start with the team in AAA. And if they go out and sign Rendon or somebody like that, it really puts Bohm's future into question. It either puts Bohm's future into question or Rhys Hoskins' future into question at first base. So one of those two things is the case. It's going to be very interesting if they do sign Rendon, what the future holds for Alec Bohm, whether or not he becomes a trade chip or whether Rhys Hoskins becomes a trade chip. Nevertheless, as far as 2020, which of these two guys do you think will have the greater impact when you consider Howard's potential innings limit or off-season moves the Phillies could make at third base that could render Bohm's appearance in Philadelphia challenging?
I'm going to say, I want to say Bohm, especially just, let's just say because of his hot start in the Arizona Fall League, just because, you know, he had a great season this year in the minors and, you know, he's 6-for-8 entering play today. They're, Scottsdale Scorpions are playing the Salt River Rafters tonight. So there'll be more Alec Bohm stats coming off this evening's contest. But, thus far, you know, two games in, he's looking pretty good. And this is the kind of platform that he's going to need to perform on for this team to be like, oh, okay, it's time to take this guy seriously, like he's ready for the next level. So this is a good starting point, I guess, is what I'm saying. And as far as the rest of the offseason goes for Alec Bohm, you know, wherever else they put him, wherever else he plays, and then going into spring training next year, I mean, that's who I want to see. I feel like that's a hole for the Phillies. And like, while I'm talking about starting pitching being the priority, I guess I just worry more about pitching prospects than I do about position prospects. I think you're right that Howard's going to come up and make an impact, but potentially at the start, it's going to be out of the bullpen or, you know, just some other limited capacity early on. Whereas Alec Bohm, I feel like if he looks good enough and the Phillies want to like use him at third base, his impact could be immediate and it could be every day as opposed to every 5 days. So yeah, I can just, for some reason, I just see that working out for the Phillies more so than Howard immediately. But I look forward to seeing both these guys next year, and hopefully they're a big part of this team's rebrand to success in 2020.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think it's going to be Bohm having more impact than Howard. I think those innings limits, unless they delay the start of Howard's season, they could very easily delay his season and not really start ramping him up until May or maybe even early June, so that the Phillies can use him and have him, you know, maybe he starts the season in AAA in May with the idea that he gets a call up in June and pitches the last 4 months with the Phillies and gives them a number four, number five starter with number two stuff in the rotation. Again, it's going to kind of depend on what we see in the Phillies rotation next year, because you're going to have Aaron Nola. Unfortunately, you are going to have Jake Arrieta. We like to just kind of mentally cross him off, but Jake Arrieta is going to exercise his player option and he will be back next year and you're going to have to start him. And I think Zach Eflin has worked his way into the rotation conversation for 2020. Would you agree?
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It's definitely not. I'd love to rip the Band-Aid off and start with something new, but you know.
No. I mean, you're right. I'm writing out a projected Phillies rotation this just today, actually, and I put them on it just because you need five pitchers and like. You know, Nola obviously gets a spot, and like you said, Arrieta gets in there. Hopefully they pick up a free agent. Hopefully more than one, just because that this rotation feels like it's in need that much of help from outside the organization. But I guess my way of putting it would be, if you're going to keep any of these guys who are still around and who we feel like we've seen enough of, you keep Eflin, I think.
Yeah.
Because, you know, tonight we got another classic Vince Velasquez start. Nick Pivetta looks more and more like the most hittable pitcher in baseball. And he's proven to, you know, we were talking about mental health skills earlier. I mean, he seemed to really struggle with that on the mound and lose control and start throwing pitches right down the middle of the plate. Eflin has put together some pretty impressive splits, honestly,
yeah,
at the end of the season. And it all started right around mid-August when he went back to his sinker. And, you know, that we brought that narrative up when it was like, okay, the pitching coaches wanted him to do this. He stopped doing what they wanted and went back to what he knew. And it was through August 10th, he had a 4.49 ERA, and he was using a sinker only 15% of the time. He was leaning on the four-seamer a lot. He was getting a lower ground ball rate than I think he wanted.
Yeah.
After that, starting August 17th, since then, he's had a 2.84 ERA. His sinker usage has gone from 15 to 39% of the time, and his four-seamer usage has gone like cut in half. He's been getting more ground balls and about the same amount of strikeouts. But like, you can see where the change happened, and he's put up some really good numbers since then. And, you know, it sucks because this is a guy who's had to remake himself more than once, the guy who got both his knees replaced.
Yeah.
So, like, this has been, you know, it hasn't been just like, oh, Zach Eflin, he was a fringe prospect, he struggled, he fixed something, and now he's great. It's been like a couple of bumps in the road here, and some of the bumps have been almost a full season long. So it's a shame that it feels like there's been a lot of wasted time with him. But if you're going to keep one of these guys, unarguably, it's got to be him. Because you squint at the numbers, you can actually find a decent patch of impactful pitching from Zach Eflin. So it wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
So, but I will disagree with you. I will say I think Spencer Howard has a greater impact on the 2020 Phillies, because I think there's a way that they could manipulate his 2020 season so that the innings limits still come in September, as opposed to what happened with Steven Strasburg in 2012, where they basically sat him down in August for the rest of the season because, coming off of Tommy John, they didn't want to risk injuring him. And obviously, you know, he has been very good for them for a number of years, but they have never been able. That might have been their best shot to get to the World Series over the course of his career. So I think teams have learned their lesson. And if the Phillies want Spencer Howard to be a part of the 2020 big league team, they should probably delay the start of his season. And if they do that, I think he'll have the greater impact than Alec Bohm, because I still think the Phillies are going to go outside the organization for third base. I just feel like they can't go into the season with Michael Franco and with the hopes of bringing up Alec Bohm in May or June. I just think the fan base would go a little bit crazy about that. But we'll see what happens with the Phillies here in this offseason. We're going to have lots of time to talk about the offseason coming up in the next week or so. And we're going to talk about the baseball playoffs, you know, when we reconnoiter every Sunday night and chat about what the Phillies are going to do in 2020. Because, you know, Justin and Liz and I, we do just love baseball, and postseason baseball is still one of my favorite things in the world. So we'll get into the postseason, and maybe next week we'll do a little postseason preview episode and give you our picks for who we think is going to win the World Series and all that. Before we wrap up episode 321, Justin, any final thoughts?
What that final score wind up being tonight? Phillies playing on Sunday Night Baseball, was it 10-1?
It was 10-1. 10-1 bad guys.
Hey, you know what? The season's been great for our stable of dirty inning episodes. So.
Yes. Mike Morin gave you some good fodder for the seventh inning.
He's going to come up a lot. You're going to learn a lot of Mike Morin facts.
In 15 years, guys, get ready to learn six of Mike Morin's nicknames. It's going to be good stuff. But make sure you're checking out the Dirty Inning on the Good Fight podcast feed. Hilarious stuff there from Justin and Trevor Strunk. Also, Justin and Liz's show, Continued Success, and both both episodes of Hittin' Season every single week, as you guys all well know. Everybody who listens to this subscribes and downloads and all that stuff. If you haven't left a rating or a review, by the way, please do that on Apple Podcasts. That does help the podcast grow a lot. Anyway, thanks everybody for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next time right here on Hittin' Season.